We talk about how timeless fashion lets us build sustainable wardrobes, but what if the benefits of timelessness weren't confined to our customers' closets? Today's guest, Gabriela Garcia Olivo, found that her timeless designs helped her build a more sustainable business. Her story is one of resilience, refinement, and reflection. In this episode, she shares her perspective on what it takes and why it's worth it to build her fashion brand. So stay tuned to hear the two things that have made the biggest difference in finding her customers and growing her brand. What kept Gabriela going when sales were slow and burnout was looming in her life, and how her value of timeless style has led to a timeless business. Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. So, welcome, Gabriela, to How Fitting.
Hi, Allison. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Your designs are, they're so timeless, I feel like. But I know that building your business has taken time, and resilience seems to be a big part of your story. How has the timeline of developing and launching Gabriela Michelle changed you in, as a designer, as a business owner over the years?
Yeah, it's definitely been a process, and I just kind of embrace the approach of being a slow fashion brand, hence following a slower approach than I expected when I started this. It's really changed me as it's made me a lot more patient. I started the brand without previous background in fashion or business. And I thought that within like a year, I could have samples done and production partners and just kind of be up and running. And it's always like taking double the time to do anything. So that was like a lesson in patience and resilience and just not giving up because things are taking a little longer than expected. And sometimes it kind of feels like every little obstacle is just like, should I just give up now? Like, why is this so hard? But I just kind of learned to keep on going because this is something that I really believe in. It's been like my lifelong dream and I didn't want to give up just because things got a little tough at the beginning.
Yeah. So how long have you kind of had the idea for this brand and like when did you first get started on it?
The idea to design clothes honestly has been a thing since I was a child. I will be like the child that was running around my house wrapped in like blankets being like, oh, I made this dress. But look at this shirt that I can do. And my parents will always laugh about it and be like, oh yeah, she's just playing like pretend. And then once I finished school, like high school, I thought about going to fashion school, but I honestly got nervous about what that could look like in the future. And I just opted for a more traditional route, studying business and such. And even once I finished getting my degrees, I still felt like something was missing. Like I could be doing more with my time than just working an office job. And that's when I felt like I should just go back to this idea that's always been in the back of my mind and really try to make something out of it. So that started around 2019. Once it started with the pandemic, I had to completely hit pause and I didn't resume working on it until like 2022.
Wow. So you've really been developing this for a number of years. I'm curious, like, what were some of the, like, in 2019 when you decided, I'm going to dive into this dream of creating my own clothing brand, what were some of the things that you initially did to learn a little bit about the industry and get started since you didn't have that background in fashion?
Yeah, so the first thing I did was I did start looking up online at resources and trying to learn from other people, and I did found this program at the time. It was called Factory 45.
Oh,
I'm not sure
yeah.
if it's still around, but I did enroll in the program and that was extremely helpful because it was just everything kind of condensed and what you needed to know to get started. So that was my starting point. And from then, honestly, it was just trial and error and learning along the way. But that was a really good basis for me to start off.
Gotcha. Yeah. What were some of the things that you tried that maybe didn't work out? And then maybe some things that you tried and were like, oh, this is great. Like, is it kind of a You landed on kind of the perfect fit for what you wanted to do.
My first mistake, I'll say now looking back, was I did my first samples with just like a pattern making house, and it took us 7 samples to get the first dress, like the fit right.
Oh, wow.
And obviously being the first time, like we didn't have a pattern to go off from the sizing of the brand. So everything was just kind of like trying to figure out on the spot. And once we got that perfect sample and I took it to like production factories, they were telling me that it wasn't translating. Like what they were making wasn't matching the sample, and they basically had to redo those patterns all over again.
Oh no.
And yeah, so that was like a big like I was thinking like maybe I'll just do some samples here to kind of save a little bit of money, and then the factory would be able to take it and just reproduce my designs. And that wasn't the case. So it ended up being double the cost, since I had to pay for new patterns to be made by that specific factory. That's the one that I now work with. But again, I didn't know at the time. Now that I do, I just recommend, or I feel like it's just best to work with one factory from beginning till end.
Wow. Yeah, so were those, I'm just curious of like what didn't work with that? Like, did the sample house, were they making the patterns on paper, or was it like a file issue where the factory wasn't able to use the pattern files that had been developed at the sample house?
Yeah, so they actually gave me the patterns on paper and the file, and they were able to open them, but they were telling me that the measurements were just wrong. And it was just, and that the design that I had was like a little more complicated than that. Again, me not knowing from a design background, I'd like sketch something and I thought this should be really simple to make. And then when I get to talk to like the pattern makers, they're like, this is not as simple as it seems on paper. It's very complicated, a lot of steps, facings to hold the fabric, because I only work with linen. So it was just a lot of learning curves. And again, because I didn't know, I just had to kind of take everything along the way and make the most of it. But yeah, the samples, it was just measuring differences that wasn't working.
Interesting. Yeah, so then you said you kind of took a pause on things at that point during the pandemic. Is that kind of in 2020? Is that where we're talking, where you were starting to work at that factory and the patterns didn't work out?
Yeah, that's when I had to take a pause. I'm fully also self-funded, so I had to be like, I need to take a moment to kind of save up some more to really get things started, now that I had a better idea how much it would really cost to make the samples, and not even that, but like production, because I had 4 more designs that I wanted to work on and develop, and I was only working with one, and kind of all my money ended up being spending that one first design.
Yeah. Is that a dress, that first design? Is it a dress that's still in your collection now?
Yes, it's actually my best seller now, so I'm glad I did.
Yes, it
I'm
sounds
glad
like
I
it was
didn't give
worth
up on
it.
that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great dress, and now I get a lot of compliments on the fit. So I thought it was worth it from the beginning, and it did end up being that way.
Yeah, which dress is it? I'm curious now.
That's the Isabella dress, which I have in green and blue with pockets. Oh, people love the pockets too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm always a fan of pockets too.
Yeah.
Okay, so you took a break for it from developing things, and it sounds like kind of saved up and reassessed like a little bit the process. So, what were some of the things, like when did you pick it back up, and what were some of the things that you did differently when you kind of resumed development on the other three pieces?
So once we resumed development, that was around 2023. And then just having learned how much money everything took, instead of trying to launch 5 designs at once, I scaled it down to 2. And I was thinking, let me test this out and see how it goes. So we did those 2, we launched it. And then another mistake I learned, that I was spending all of my time focusing on development, that I wasn't spending as much time in marketing. And being an entrepreneur and the one person that does it all, I just couldn't handle with everything. So when it launched, it was really slow because people weren't aware of my brand and nobody really knew me besides my friends and family. So then it was like a second uphill battle trying to now really get out there and reach people and market the brand and raise that awareness. So now I know better not to just spend all my energy in one area and disregard the other.
Have you found what is the ratio now that you, in terms of like time or budget, allocate to developing the product versus developing your audience and the business awareness?
It's honestly right now like a 60% working on that awareness and a 40% on the design, because I had so many ideas of things that I wanted to launch that I haven't been able to. So I kind of have designs already that have been just waiting to be developed. And now majority of my time is spent on the marketing, especially now that I have a stable production factory that I work with, and we now know my sizing and my patterns can be reused as a base for other designs. It just kind of makes the whole process a little more smoother and quicker. But that also took another pause of rethinking everything, because I couldn't continue doing things the same way if that was the case, because it wasn't me successful just spending all my energy in development.
So let's talk a little bit more about your audience and your brand and kind of the aesthetics of things. So, like, how would you describe the Gabriella Michelle customer?
The Gabriella Michelle customer to me is a woman that she likes to look put together, but it's an effortless. Like, my designs seem very simple when you look at them, but it's more like the fit that they give you once you try them on that really uplifts it. So it's a woman that likes to look good, put together, but is not trying so hard, and she's not following the trends either. She just likes to be timeless. The brand Gabriella Michelle, a contemporary slow fashion, inspired by the style of the 1950s with a little bit touch of modern design, for women. It's meant to make you feel empowered and beautiful and always comfortable in the clothes. You make a statement without making a statement like loudly, if that makes sense. You just walk in and people notice you, but it's not because you're trying to get that attention. You just kind of naturally have that reaction to you.
Yeah, there's something about, especially it's like when garments are like tailored and fit well just to you, like there's a level of polish that, it could be a simple t-shirt and still it's like if the fit is impeccable and the construction and the fabrics are high quality, then like it really looks impressive, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to achieve with every piece. Just really rely on that craftsmanship to make it stand out.
So you said your brand is inspired by kind of 1950s, the feminine silhouettes, and also like the flair of Latin America.
Yes.
Why did you bring those two inspirations together in your brand, and what did they mean to you?
The 1950s, I've always been a fan of the fashion in that era and just those decades. And I think this comes down to the fact that every day, even if women were just staying at home, just clothes was meant to be polished and well tailored. So you always just look put together, even if it was meant to be a casual look, which I really appreciate. And that kind of connects to seeing my mom and my aunts growing up, how they were always dressing up, whether it was work or going out. It was just the style that they had and what they really embraced, which to me, that was the image of femininity, wearing accessories, doing your makeup, just making sure your clothes fits well so it highlights your figure, but you're not trying to show too much skin. You're just showing that you have a nice body by wearing clothes that are tailored to your body really nicely. And when I thought of those two, I felt like that was also kind of the purpose of clothes back then, to be tailored to show off a woman's curve in a tasteful way. And I thought those were together, and that was inspiration behind my brand and what I wanted to bring back nowadays, that a lot of the clothes are meant to be loose fitting and just very casual, and it's just a different style now that we're kind of having mainstream, and I'm still a fan of the older style.
Yeah, what that's a, such a good point. It's like we do have a more like slouchy style in general now. They don't dress up as much. Have you thought about, or do you have thoughts on like why do you think we've lost the art of dressing up in today's kind of like modern world?
I do see how the times affect how we, the things that we spend money on. And I know to a lot of people, dressing up might seem like something high maintenance or expensive, and I understand why they might not want to do it. And obviously, with fast fashion, it's really easy to just opt for those options than spend a little more money on a well-constructed piece of clothes. But having worked in fast fashion myself too, that's another point where I was inspired by my clothes. I see how maybe it might seem a little more expensive at first to buy a well-tailored piece, but it's just so much more worth it. Like, the way it fits you and the way it makes you feel, that's just priceless to me. And I think that's what people tend to overlook or forget, and they just choose to go for what's provided by brands, which is now that slouchy fit, and that's what's most easily accessible.
So how have you incorporated those two inspirations, Latin America and the style and the flair from that, and then this 1950s, like more dressing up, the tailored looks into your pieces and or even your business?
Into the pieces, I really take a lot of inspiration from that time. So you see details in my blouses, like all the fabric cover buttons. I knew that was something I really wanted to have in the beginning because I noticed that was something very distinctive back then. I do use a lot of pleats. I love like princess seams and such to give you that feminine curve. It's just the little details in the construction that go in the design. And as far as the business goes, it's the pillar of that would be like just being timeless. And that's something that I use also in my business, being that when most brands are saying that you have to release a collection 4 times a year, at least twice a year to stay relevant, I'm kind of choosing to do the opposite and just do one that's timeless and you can wear it any time of the year and not trying to make you buy something every 2 months because that's also not sustainable, not for the customer and not for one as like the brand owner and the one that's trying to design something and take photos and market it and sell it is very exhausting.
Yeah, I saw some photos on, I think it was your Instagram, of like the sleeveless dress, with the double-breasted like buttons,
Oh, yeah.
where you styled it like very summery. And then also styled it with like a white turtleneck underneath. And I thought it looked like so good in both ways, where you really could kind of wear this piece in different seasons.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose behind every piece, that it could work in either seasons. Also, I'm in LA, so the weather in LA is pretty nice all year round. So that also like makes me think like, you could really wear this like all year round, especially somewhere here like LA, but other places too. Another thing is that you can dress her up or down, whether you want to throw on a coat or you just want to wear it with sandals, like it's up to you. But I think the piece lends itself to have that wearability.
So what are some of the other like values or like principles that Gabriella Michelle is built on?
One of the values is being sustainable, which it's not something that I feel like you can ever truly achieve, but it's something that I do work towards. So I only use natural fabrics. My dresses are made either with 100% linen or they're made with like 96% cotton and 4% elastane. But it's something that's really important to me, just using high quality fabrics that are ideally 100% natural. And another thing is just being a slow fashion in its sense of releasing fewer things, but that you can really wear all year round. And then trying to, in my own way, remind people of the value that it comes with spending a little bit more money on one piece that's going to last you a long time versus something that you might buy at a fast fashion store that only lasts a couple of months and it goes out of season like by the next fall.
Yeah, so how did you go about sourcing these fabrics or finding the different elements of your pieces that you wanted to use?
The sourcing was made really easy because of Factory 45. Being part of the program, they share with you a whole not like knowledge base of suppliers depending on where you are in the country. So that was really helpful for me as I had a list of people that I could go to here in LA. And I was just basically visiting their showrooms and looking at what they had. And that was really fun for me to do, to just see like the different fabrics they had and learn about them. So I was the one sourcing the fabrics, the buttons, the zippers. And it just made everything a lot more special for me because I was really putting every single building block for the design together myself. It wasn't someone else doing this for me.
That's so fun to be able to live in a fashion hub and have those fabric resources and trim resources available locally. There's not much in my part of the country, and it's something that, if I want to do that, I have to go to a trade show or travel to see a bunch of samples in person.
Yeah, I feel very lucky to be in LA and to have access to all the suppliers and all these factories. And I'm well aware of that. Like, it just makes things easier.
Yeah. What is kind of your role in the business? Like, what are the things that you're doing versus maybe working with a factory or another partner, on in your brand? Sounds like you do all the design and sourcing. Is there anything else that kind of you're doing hands-on yourself?
Yes, the design for sure. All the designs are mine, the sourcing as well. I have a very clear idea of like the fabrics I want to use, again, because I'm not trying to be as sustainable as possible. And the creative director of the brand, if you see on my Instagram, there's a very distinctive image that we're trying to build with the brand, rooted on the inspiration of it. And that's something that, again, I'm just trying to bring back that glamour to every day now from the 1950s. And I do have been working with an agency that helps me with like the marketing and bringing that vision that I have for the brand to life through the photographies and the stylings and how we do our pictures. So that has been really helpful to have someone else really understand that concept of being able to fully bring it to life for me.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So when did you bring that marketing agency on to help you with that?
I started working with them at the beginning of last year. In 2023, after I launched the first designs, and it was super slow because I was aware that I had a marketing problem, an awareness problem. I took again some time to pause and rethink things. And that's when I realized that I needed the help. I couldn't be the one person doing it all. And when I brought in this agency that I had already known, I've been working with on the site for a little bit, we really kind of sat down and broke everything down to the core, like who's your customer, what are they doing, why would they buy from you, like really defining my brand's DNA and image and the voice of it. And once we did that, it was so easy to translate that to how we should style the pictures, the dresses, I mean, for pictures for campaign, how we should be posting on social media, just giving me a clear path of how my brand is to be shown to people, given if this is my values and this is what I really want to communicate.
Yeah, building that visual identity is a step that like I probably, I'm more on the technical side of things, so I would probably not think of that initially either. But it definitely gives a really clear sense of like your brand and what you're doing. And that's where I first came across your brand was on Instagram and seeing, just scrolling your feed. Like it captures, I think, what you're doing. I could see it, with just a few minutes of scrolling your feed.
Thank you, Allison. I'm glad it shows. Like that just makes me happy because it's people are understanding where I'm coming from then.
Yeah, so was that what did you see kind of like initial results to your sales like once you started that marketing, or was it a little bit more of a slower build up to having more of that awareness?
It's been a progressive growth, I will say. Along with the marketing, we did do a rebrand. And then along with that rebrand, I also started focusing 100% on booking in-person pop-ups throughout LA to really get myself out there. And having that well-defined image helped me to book pop-ups because there have been places where I had been applying before and I had been getting rejected. And once we kind of show with this new rebrand at a new collection, I was now being accepted. And I really believe that it was the change in the presentation that we had that made it seem like this is a serious brand. Let's give them a chance. So it really did help. And then I've been doing pop-ups starting at least twice a month. And that has been really successful for my sales and just getting people to know me. And it's just been extremely validating when they see a photo and they comment on it or they just see the designs and they tell me like, it reminds me of like the 50s or reminds me of something my mom used to have. And I'm like, that's the point. Like that's inspiration. I'm glad it shows.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about the, even the in-person, like you get more of those comments that, in passing that you may not get in an online space or if you just like had a website where you were selling, but in person you can kind of absorb the full reaction of people as they encounter your brand and the vision that you've built.
Yeah, in-person events are the most satisfying and fulfilling events to me. Just getting that reaction of people, like you're saying, and even if they're not shopping, just getting their feedback, it's really helpful to know what people are looking for and to know how I can improve my designs further for next time or what I can introduce that it will be something that will sell well.
Have any interesting like insights or feedback come out of doing those events that maybe were surprising to you?
Yes, one thing that still surprised me is when I have men approach and really take in the designs and they comment on the construction. And I had a couple of men ask me, are you going to make men's clothes or do you have men's designs? Which I just find always flattering. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe in the future, like that might be a thing. This weekend, I had someone also, it was just a nice comment. They saw one of my dresses and I have this like green jade dress. And they mentioned how they had a dress like that it was their grandma like passed down to them like the exact same color. And it's just learning things like that are really, it's always like heartwarming, like, oh, thanks. I'm glad it reminds of something, like evokes an emotion when you see the design.
Yeah, that's really powerful. Like the to create an emotional connection like that and, evoke memories, fond memories of, oh, I remember, I have this memory of my grandma in that color or something. That's really powerful.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing these pop-ups kind of twice a month?
I started doing them a little bit in 2023. Maybe I did like my first two or three. And then last year, again, it was more of taking that break to redefine everything for the brand and work in that rebranding. So I didn't kind of start again until November. So as of this year, in February, I started really doing those pop-ups every month. So since this year in February.
Yeah, and we're recording in the beginning of August 2025 for anyone listening to the podcast. So it's been like seven months-ish.
Yes.
It sounds like the marketing made a big difference. And then have these pop-ups made a big difference in the direction of your brand at all, or like looking forward for Gabriella Michelle?
It has shown me areas that I want to definitely improve, like on the feedback. I have a lot of dresses, and then only one of them has pockets. And something I have got it for people was, if this had pockets, I would have bought it in an instant. So it's like, I'm taking note of that. Like, if I make designs with this flare style, I make sure to add pockets because that's what women are looking for and they're asking. So things like that are always shaping when I'm designing or thinking of the new pieces I'm gonna create, how I'm gonna listen to the customer and really incorporate that feedback. And what has just mainly shown me is being able to talk to people, learn who my customer is, like who's really shopping, and how I can design with them in mind more.
Yeah. I know the aesthetic and the inspiration is really dialed in at this point for your brand, but has getting to know the customer more and seeing like who is actually buying, has that changed your view of who the target customer is? Was that a kind of a different person or, a different segment of women than you expected?
It has expanded who I thought my customer would be. Because when I started the brand, I'm in my early 30s, and I was thinking this could be for women in my age and maybe a little older who are going to really resonate and connect to that style. And now that I'm doing pop-ups, I'm getting younger Gen Zs really liking the clothes, which I was not expecting. So I'm
Interesting.
thinking, oh, it's not just millennial women like myself. Like, there are other Gen Zs out there who are liking this and they're willing to buy it. And it's just really always interesting to see that to me.
Yeah. What do you think is resonating so much with them?
I think it's something that to them seems like it's not what they find everywhere else. Like they find it maybe it's like a little unique, and that's why they're being attracted to it. And I also see how they like to really contrast, like, one of my blouses with their style. It's a little more like casual and a little more like jeans and dress down. So I feel like they like to also use the pieces to make that contrast and create like their own version of like unique outfits. But then I also have customers who are maybe in their 40s and a little older. So to me, it's just really gratifying to see how it doesn't have to be boxed in for only a certain age range. It could be for any age range, really.
That's so fascinating. And yeah, I do feel like Gen Z is more like they lean into their personal style and aesthetic and they explore that and they're like more okay being different versus I'm
Yes.
also probably similar age to you. And so it's like us millennials, there's obviously exceptions, but like as a whole, we tend to like to blend in a little bit more with our style versus some other generations. So that's cool that Gen Z folks are gravitating towards a unique aesthetic from your brand.
And no, yeah, I remember too when I was in my early 20s as a millennial, like I was following the trends. Like, I was always following the trends. And it wasn't until later at the end that I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. That's not really my style.
Yeah. So, do you wear your brand's pieces a lot? Like, are you your own customer?
I am. I do wear them, and I like to wear them all the time. Like, if I'm going to a concert, I'll be wearing my dresses. If I'm going out to lunch, I'll wear them. And I just feel really, really comfortable in them. And I also enjoy it because I do get commented by people being like, oh, I like your dress. And usually my reaction is like, oh, thank you. And then my sister will be with me. She'll be like, "You should mention that you designed it." And I'm like, "Oh, I forgot." Like, I'm not used to so I'm always like, "Oh, thanks." And then my sister or whoever will be with me, they're like, "Oh, you should start marketing that. That is your design. That is your brand." And getting used to that. And I'm like, "Yeah, I need to work on that."
Yeah, carry around some business cards or something and be like, yeah, it's my brand. You can shop here.
I'm working on that.
Yeah. It is fun to answer and be like, thanks, I made it, or thanks, I designed it. It's a special when you get to wear your own pieces.
Yeah, it really is. It's unlike anything else, a feeling.
So with the production and finding, like, you have these clear values for your brand, the sustainability, the slow fashion. How did you find the factories and people that were really aligned with those values as you picked your brand back up and started building the collection?
I talked to a couple of factories, and to be honest, that was the scariest part of the process because I had seen online so many reviews that people share that they sign up with the factory, they pay like $20,000 and such, and they never got their products, or they got just really poorly made products, or they would just kind of take their money and run with it. So I was so hesitant to find a factory that was legitimate. And I talked to a few, and what I was learning that in LA, there's so many factories. But the majority that I was talking to, they're telling me, like, "We don't do that kind of work. We do just t-shirts and jersey fabrics or knits." And I did have a bit of a hard time trying to find factories that would be willing to work with cotton and linen and make something a little more tailored. I finally found one, and I talked to the owner myself, and then I went to her factory and I saw things. And she was explaining to me, like, the cost breakdown and how, even though it was a little more expensive, it was because workers were getting paid a livable wage. It wasn't like they were being in a sweatshop environment, and just seeing that even though it was more costly than other options, I was okay with it because I knew that that was something I also wanted to have as a value, like ethical work and fair labor. And that was really the deciding factor. And it was a women-owned factory as well, employing minorities. I thought that was also something I wanted to support as I'm a Hispanic myself. And that was, for me, what made me trust this person. And in the end, like, the construction, what they give me, is just impeccable, and I couldn't be happier with their work.
That's amazing. Again, the ability to, like, visit in person is, such a trust builder where you really can see, what is the exact environment that, the pieces will be cut and sewn in, and meet some of the people that are making your clothes.
Yes.
Have you worked with them then on start to finish, like, pattern sampling and production now?
Yes, I have worked for them from start to finish, with the first linen dresses that I made, which are my signature pieces, and now we're developing some new designs. So we're now in that sample and fitting stage. I'm very excited for that. And it's just been a really, really good, smooth process. I did work with another factory for my last collection. I outsourced that to Colombia, and that was a collection made with cotton. And then I just saw how hard it was to work with a factory that wasn't in the same city as me, as I couldn't go in person and just kind of check on things along the way. And it was just a lot of more like obstacles given the distance and the time. And that's what made me decide to go back to just doing everything in LA, even though I wanted to work with the factory in South America because I'm from South America. I was thinking, like, it would be nice if I could give some of that money back to a business over there. But it's just so hard with having to ship things back and forth and not being able to be in the same city.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm glad that this LA factory has really worked out well, and that you've, like, built a relationship where you can trust each other, and you're on the same page with these different values. It's really a big part of, I think, running a fashion brand is finding that right fit of factory.
Yes, it makes just everything easier. Like, I can sleep at night knowing that if they tell me it's gonna be done in 3 months, like, it will be done at that timeline. Like, they don't mess up in that sense. And that's so important for a brand.
So what do you to, kick off the new designs that you're working on now, like, what do you usually provide to them? Or, like, what does it look like to start a new piece with them?
Again, like, I don't have fashion. Traditional fashion background. Like, I did not study design. So for me, it goes to like I will sketch everything like how I'm seeing it in my head, and I will also write like descriptions, like one pages for every detail that I could think of, so it could be easier for them. And then I meet with the pattern maker, and I explain also to him in person what I'm trying to do, and I will take one of my existing designs so they can use them as a reference for the sizing, and I will kind of tell him like, this is what I'm thinking for the collar. I want this kind of seam here, like I want it to be this length. I just try to give them as much detail as possible. And then the pattern maker will give me his feedback on what would be like the best way to achieve that fit that I'm thinking of, with that vision, with his knowledge, because again, he just knows everything. Like I'm just thinking like, this is what I can see in my head. I'm like, now I need you to give me your knowledge and how do we actually sew that together. So it becomes this collaborative process. And once we kind of settle on the design that I really want, they start working on the patterns and the blocks. We try those on, I see them, I approve them, and then we go on to do the samples. And then again, approve the samples or make revisions if we need to. And once I sign that off, it's just off to production.
Nice. So you're doing the initial sample, the initial samples in your actual fabrics, or are you doing them in kind of like muslin?
No, we're doing it in my actual fabrics.
Nice. Yeah, I always feel like you can test the fabric and the drape of that along with testing the fit, especially now that you have pieces to work off of that you know work well and sell well.
Yeah, it's I just don't want to take this risk anymore to trying to cut corners at the beginning, because it's not worth it at the end. Like your final product is not going to be the same if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, so about how many revisions do you typically go through now? I know you said when you had worked with the sample house before working with the factory, it took 7 revisions and then another one at the factory. What is kind of the average that it takes with this new process at the factory?
Right now, we're looking at 1 to 2, honestly. Like, they just understand my fit so well
That's amazing.
that it's really easy. And like, I just see the differences. Like, the first sample already, like, I've just seen like the pictures and the videos. We're actually doing a fitting today for it.
So
But
fun.
just looking at it, yeah, I'm so excited. Just looking at it on the mannequin, I'm like, it just looks so right. Versus the first time when we had my first sample made, I was just like looking at the pictures and I was like horrified because I'm like, that's nothing at all like what I had envisioned. Like,
I
what's
know.
happening?
Yeah, that's always so scary. It's like when you aren't able to go in person, the sample, gets shipped to you and a box comes and you're like, is this going to be a complete nightmare or is this going to be like
Yeah.
Christmas morning and I'm opening up like a gift that's beautiful and I love it. Sometimes you don't know, but that's so fun.
Yes.
Are you the fit model for your brand or do you work with like a different model to actually try on the pieces during a fitting?
No, I have a fit model that I hire, because I just also like I'm not the best measurements, and there's people, if they don't know, like a fit model really makes all the difference, because I'm not trying to stay in a specific weight to fit my clothes. Like I need to hire a professional because they're always going to be consistent and I know it's going to fit them right. So we are hiring a fit model, and I just think it's really, really worth like the investment.
Yeah, I know some startup brands, they want to save some money and well, and some brands, especially like during COVID, there was restrictions on well who can be in the room and how many people can we have, so they're like, well, I'll just try it on myself if they are their target market. But it is so much harder, I think, one, because you have to maintain your weight and size as a fit model, and I feel like it's harder to be objective about clothes on your own body. I don't know if you feel this way wearing your designs,
100%.
but it's like it's hard to separate your own personal feelings of yourself or of what styles you like from, when you can see it on someone else as the designer, it's easier to like step back and look at the whole design with a little bit, less a biased opinion.
And specifically, I'm thinking like on my dresses, like the armholes, like if it's on me, like I couldn't be able to see if it's too high or too low versus seeing on someone else, like the neckline. It's just easier having that person to be like your life mannequin and to do it. And then I do also see like when people are trying it on, like I would like something that's more fitted. And then some people are like, oh no, I want to go size up because I like the looser fit. But if I was designing with my head, my personal taste in mind, like everything would just be like super fitted or like maybe super loose, you know. So I'd rather see it in someone else to make that like what's going to be the best fit that's going to be better for everyone. And again, you can't really make a fit that works for every single body, but you can try to kind of do something that will be flattering for most people.
Yeah. And it's tricky, to be honest, to try to make something that is specific, that is unique and specific, but also is not just made for one person. It is tricky, but when you get it right and you can like strike that balance, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, like something I learned actually for one of my designs, I was using some certain pleats around, I mean, darts around like the bust. And then I love how it looked, but then just seeing it on so many customers, I'm like, this is a bit of a problem because unless they have a really cool chest, like the design is not looking or it's not hitting as it should. So I was like, I need to make a note of that. And as much as I like it, like we need to revise that and make it something that's more flattering for most people, not just people that have a full bust.
Yeah, I mean the 1950 style, there's a lot of darts in
Yeah.
that, but they also, I mean, kind of like foundation garments and bras were shaped
Designed for
differently
that.
too. They were a little bit more pointy, and now we have a little bit more of a kind of a rounded figure to
Yeah.
our underwear and shapewear. And yeah, the princess seams, which I know you use, are a little more flexible in that, where they don't
Yeah.
get so pointy and you can get away with maybe slightly different cup sizes and it still looks good.
Yes.
Yeah, so are there some other ways that you've taken this vintage inspiration and made it more modern, either in the function or the style?
I would like to think that the way I make it modern is just trying to keep it really simple. Like, I'm trying to make something that's really well defined, the structure of it, but I'm not trying to make it so, I guess, polished that you feel like you can only wear it to like a specific event, like, oh, I can only wear this for a night out. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to make it so it's like accessible and you can see that you could wear it if you want. Sure, you can wear it to work or you could just wear it to go to a brunch. Just trying to make it clean in that sense of design, but still keep that element of its polish.
That makes sense. So, what is a moment or story that you're most proud of in running your brand so far?
Wow. For me, the moments that I am the most proud is when I see women try on the dresses and the pieces, and they just have like the biggest smile on their face because it just fits them so perfectly. Like it was custom made for them. And I just see like these women like smile and look at themselves in the mirror, like nonstop, and like do these twirls. And that emotion, it's like what it's about for me, being able to generate that through something that I designed for them and seeing how good they feel in it and how beautiful they feel. Like that's just priceless. That to me is like what it's successful about having a brand, being able to evoke that emotion and create that for someone else.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of my favorite moments in my job is, doing fittings, seeing the fit model or, seeing the customer try it on, and that smile is, it's like that's what I always look for.
Yeah, you see in the smile, like the eyes, this is like a spark. It's like, okay, yeah, this is, I look good in this. Like, I need this.
Yeah, even more than like their comments, you can like always tell by their face.
Yeah, it
That's so special.
really is.
So, what does success look like for you with this brand? Like, what, obviously those little moments are what feels successful, but is there, any other goals that you have for the business that you're working towards?
Yeah, there's like the different layers to the success. Right now I'm in that stage where I'm really trying to find that customer and I'm getting to that people and just seeing, like I said, that reaction that's like successful because it validates that this idea that I had that is something that I know I love, other people also love it and they're buying into it. So that's like a sign of the success. And there's obviously like the certain goals that you want to hit, like, be able to sell this many units or this amount a month. Like, that's something that I feel like I do have those numbers and those milestones, but it's not something that I need right now. It's going to feel like it's going to take its time. And also because given that I'm a slow fashion, like, I'm just not trying to sell to everyone. I'm just trying to sell to that customer that really understands the brand and our vision and what it's going to. So to me, the success will be just being able to grow that community of customers that really understand my brand. And then everything else, I feel like it will just follow and it will fall into place.
Other than like the pop-ups and this kind of rebrand of the marketing agency, are there other things that you're doing to kind of build that community around the brand?
Yes, another thing that I'm working on as I'm seeing how well the pop-ups are doing, like I am working towards being able to be in an actual like boutique to have like a place that people can go, because that's something they always ask me, like, where can I buy from you? Where can I find you? And I always tell them, like, you can shop online or like pop-ups, but they do wish there was like a place that they could just go to, because maybe they didn't feel like trying on things on that day, but they liked it. And it's really hard for like the clothes to re it's really hard to sell it if they're not able to try it on and see how it looks on them. So I do see how it's essential to have a store, like a boutique to be in, so they can always go, and when they're ready to shop, like, it's there for them to try it on and they can buy it.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Do you have a place in mind or a boutique in mind that you want to see your pieces in?
I have a few boutiques around LA, so I'm like, I need to now work on going to those places and building those relationships and seeing how we can make that happen.
So exciting. What would you say has been the biggest challenge then in running Gabriella Michelle?
Let's see. I think the biggest challenge is there's been a couple. One, not having like a blueprint for how to do this, because it's, I just kind of had this idea and I just threw myself into it. So the mistakes I've learned along the way and being okay with them and not beating myself up too much for making those mistakes because I didn't know any better, that has been like a constant challenge. Staying resilient has been another thing that I had to work on and not let it get to me, like the initial like failures of launching, but no one knew about it. Like that was just being able to learn from those things and just kind of improve instead of just letting that be the end of it all. And then now just initially was finding that customer, which I now have found, but that took some time too, and that was a challenge. And I feel like there were so many other things that needed to be worked on, like I'd say, like the image and the core messages and the core values of the brand, and being able to communicate that so people could really understand and connect to that. That was a key to being able to find those customers and putting myself out there through events so they can meet me and see the clothes and get to know the brand.
Yeah, you have been very resilient through all this, and like you said, you've run into these challenges, but you didn't stop there. I think a lot of people, like, they would kind of give up and they would say, like, this is the end, like, I can't do this, and those pauses in the brand would have just been the end for them. What has kept you going to try new things, to, move past those stakes or things that you didn't know and try again?
My biggest driving force to continue is that I see this as what I wanted to be, like my full-time job. Like this is something I work on and part-time, because I do have like a full-time career and a job, but my goal will be to make my brand like my sole job and be able to just fully work for myself and expand my vision and my designs. So being able to work towards that bigger picture is what keeps me going.
Yeah. So those times when you did step back and reassess things or take a break before continuing, what was kind of your mindset going into those breaks? Did you set a certain time of like, I'm going to wait 6 months or a year and then pick it back up? Or was it just, I'm going to give myself the space and the time to do whatever I need to and I'll pick it back up whenever I pick it back up?
It was a bit of the second one. Like, it got to the point where I was like, I spent like so many years of having this idea and like working and investing on launching this, and like it wasn't like an overnight success, so I did have like a couple, like maybe 3 months of like, okay, let me get this out of my mind because I need to focus on other things and like get myself back up. And once I did have like a talk with myself, like, are we going to continue or are we going to stop? Because now will be the time to make that call. And I was like, I couldn't let that go. Like, I couldn't let the dream of it go. So I was like, okay, now it's just time to really focus on about 3 months. And then after there was like another 6 months of the deep work of like rebranding and working on the brand and having clear expectations of what to expect, so it wouldn't be like a letdown if this didn't happen overnight. It was more just setting those realistic expectations of what grow and success would be like and what it would look like.
Yeah, that's a really great point of the expectations. Like, goals should be ambitious, you know? I feel like as an entrepreneur, you really can't get in, you can't ever grow your business if you don't have the ambition to kind of dream big, which you certainly have. But then there's the flip side of the, you know, needing to be realistic and looking at, okay, what is, you know, I've got a full-time job. What is the amount of time that I can spend on this? Or I can only do so much myself. Who do I need to hire to help me? Or what is a realistic sales goal? Or how many pop-ups can I actually do? And those aren't always easy decisions. But it's necessary to kind of dream big and then be realistic about, okay, what will it actually take to get there?
Yes, 100%.
So do you feel like you've grown in the ability to balance that and give yourself those goals, but also set, you know, have expectations that are doable?
I've grown in, like setting the expectations and being realistic of how much work I can put in. Because the first time when I was starting the brand, like I was, all my free time was just going into like working on it. Like literally, I wasn't going out. I wasn't doing anything else besides my full-time job. And then weekends, nights, it was just me working on my brand. And I thought it was good because I was like making progress and defining things. But then I saw how I was also like burning myself out. Like that wasn't something I could sustain for long. And now the second time around, I was like, yes, I'm gonna work on it, but it's not gonna be to the point that I'm killing myself because then I'm not enjoying this process or this brand, and I'm like resenting this work that I'm choosing to put myself into, and like I'm choosing to make this my life. So it's like there's got to be a balance between I'm working on it and I also want to be able to enjoy this, enjoy the pop-ups and enjoy designing and enjoy going to events to tell people about my brand and not feel like it's an obligation and a chore because I'm so tired from everything else that I worked into that I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, and I think that's an aspect of sustainability that a lot of founders forget, or at least don't think about and be until they find themselves in burnout, is it has to be sustainable for you. Like, you need to be able to sustain yourself, like financially, physically, emotionally, you know, throughout this process. Otherwise, you won't be able to continue the work that you're doing.
Yes, 100%. And what you mentioned, like, it's not just like, the brand, but it's like financially, like, are your bills getting paid? Like, are you okay?
Yeah, absolutely. This has just been wonderful, Gabriella, to hear more of your story, and I'm so inspired by how you've grown as an entrepreneur and really thought so intentionally about not only the design of your brand and the pieces themselves, but about the business and what you want that to look like for your life. Thank you for taking the time to join me today.
No, thank you, Allison, for the chance to share about my brand and for inviting me on your podcast. You don't know how much I appreciate it.
Yeah, I have one last question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Wow, that's such a profound question. If I could just communicate one value, I think it would be resilience. The resilience of the designs in them being timeless, so it always works for you. The resilience of me in this process to launch my brand and being patient and reminding that I'm going on my own timeline. I'm not trying to prove anything to anyone else, so it's okay if things take a little more time or if it's not how you thought it would be at first. And just continuing, until you get to that goal in your mind or that place that you want to get to.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and having a timeless design, I think, really helps with that because there's not a pressure of like, oh, if I miss this trend fad, then it's no longer relevant. Like, your designs are timeless. And whenever they come to the world, whenever they get made, like, they'll still be relevant.
Yes.
Yeah. So where can people find out more about the brand, maybe see the pieces or shop them, either online or in person?
You can find us online. Our website is gabriellamichelle.com. You can find us on Instagram, gabriellamichelle.co. And then on our website and Instagram, I always have information about our next events or pop-ups. So you can check out there where we're going to be showing up in LA.
Wonderful. I'll put links to those in the show notes so people can check that out. And thank you so much for joining me today. This has been really fun. That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.